Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawkwire Mornings. I'm Brian Nemhauser. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those places at Hawk Blogger. And lately, you guys have been going crazy. I think we were up to like 18th or 15th in the football category on Apple Podcasts ahead of like all these national shows. It's unreal. A big reason for that is our guest today, Matt Hasselbeck, who's been joining us all season and was just extended into the postseason. This is a big announcement for everybody. Matt, how you doing?
I'm great. I need to subscribe. I don't think I subscribe to like all those things like YouTube. Maybe I do. I don't know. I gotta check all my check that stuff. I think you're gonna say Charles Cross got extended. I got extended. Yeah. No, that was you were like, you hit me up like, hey, we didn't talk about this. You want to keep going into the playoffs? I'm like, bro. I'm planning on doing this in Santa Clara. What are you talking about?
Let's go.
It's been an awesome year. I mean, just to think where the Seahawks were. I mean, I do like other, you know, shows like national type stuff. And people would ask me at the beginning of the year, like, you know, who are the teams that you think like didn't make the playoffs last year? No one's counting on, you know, and like, you know, there's some harder ones, like maybe the Patriots I believed in. I believe in Vrabel. But like, this was an easy one. This is a 10-win team with a top 10 defense last year, a quarterback that, like, if you take away the name and the face and the, you know, just you just watch the football, the number nameless faces on the jersey played awesome football last year in the same offense. It's like, this is an easy one. But to think the one seed, like, that's pretty incredible. I don't know if people realize how big that is. That is so good.
Well, I'm going to ask you about how big it was, but first I paint the picture for us about what was the Matt Hasselbeck persona. What was the experience like for this Saturday night game? Are you sitting down? Are you like pacing? Or like, where are you?
I'm just trying to think now, like, where was I?
It's probably not in the same place.
No. Okay. I'm in my house. My brother was on this show called ESPN Playbook. It's like a new show that streams on ESPN. So I had to be in the room that like does our like kind of like the streaming TV room. Like, kind of, uh-huh. I guess they all do it, but this is the place we would do that. So Annabelle is in like my oldest daughter, who, you know, AB, she's in another room watching like the main broadcast. Uh-huh. Myself, my son Henry, like the rest of us, we're in there like laptops, like totally computer geeked out, like, you know, with Tim as he's doing like this, like, total breakdown, like deep dive sky cam. And I know, like, heavy on the analytics and statistics. That's what that show was, kind of like a simulcast. And so I don't know, like, I was kind of geeking out at like some of the numbers of it. There were some things that, like, man, I don't know if I would have noticed this otherwise, as an example. Well, I don't want to get too much into it, but like,
let's get into it.
It felt like all their runs were going to the right. Like, they were running outside. All their runs were going to the right.
Yeah.
It was like, is that like, we think something about us? Like, we think we're too slow on the backside cutoff for our guys on the right side to get left? Or is this a weakness that we think we've figured out? Like, we want to run at this dude on our right and we're going at him. Like, what was the plan there? Because it was clear, like, our successful runs were going right. Even if they ended up going left, they were starting right, you know? So there was certainly something on the call sheet, and that happens a lot. Like, it'd be a two-way play, but you'll underline like, hey, if all things are equal, we definitely want to run it this way. And so there was something there. So I don't know if that was the analytics of it showing up, and, you know, I'll leave that to you, but it was like, yeah, there's a lot of these. So it was cool. It was, I was definitely nervous. I think you could sense that last week.
It was great.
I think I was right though. I mean, it was a 10-3 game in the fourth quarter, and we weren't playing like our special teams usually is like reliable. Wasn't, ooh, you know, like, yeah, offense was like the first, there was a sack on the one first and goal, a lot of just, you know, but the defense was so incredible. And when you look back on the wholeness of the game, Sam played a clean game. It was really great. But,
Well, so I'm a little surprised. Surprised is the wrong word. I'm curious about your relationship with analytics. Like, I would expect you to be more of a just like, I watched the thing and I'm not too focused on the numbers. Because, you know, a lot of the folks that play the game feel that way. Where are you with like data and how it affects your coaching and all those kinds of things.
No, I appreciate it. Because sometimes you're in the, you know, you're in the forest and like, you don't even know where you are, you know, and mm-hmm. you need someone. And that's why, like, I really appreciated our offensive coordinator when I played Gil Haskell. Like he didn't call the plays. He didn't like, he wasn't running meetings with like the quarterbacks, but like he had this great 35,000 foot view of everything. And he'd be like, you know, after a game, he'd come back and he'd be like, hey, you know, we need to throw it more on first down, or like, hey, we need to, you know, like whatever it is, like just some like one little, like, you know, banner, like theme. You know, we got to make sure, like, as an example, we got to make sure Bobby Engram's on the field more. Like he would say that a lot. And so like, well, okay, well, what do you want to do? You want to take a tight end out? You want to take a fullback out? Like, well, how do you want to do that? And he didn't care. He was like, yeah, I don't know. But like, you know, Bobby's got to be on the field more. You know, like those, that kind of stuff. And that's what I think. One of the things that analytics can do, can really like expose your weaknesses or really tell you like where you might be strong. And I think like sometimes it happens with players on the field. Like, I think there should be like a plus minus stat like they have in hockey for football. Like when this guy's on the field, good stuff happens. And, you know, I think there's some of that. So, yeah, I'm a fan. There's so much data thrown at you though. And as a player, which yeah. out. And this is kind of like the Brett Favre thing. I don't know if I've ever told you this story, but like Mike McCarthy was doing analytics before anybody was doing analytics. And he would just like all these numbers. And Brett would be like, so what, you know? And like, so for me, what was helpful to know is like, okay, if this number gets over a certain, you know, I would use 35% when they're bringing two linebackers or more. If it's over 35%, it deserves my attention. If it's under 35%, like, you know, I just got to keep it moving, you know, stuff like
that. Yeah. It reminds me of my old life in the tech world. And we were building applications and the engineers be like, oh yeah, we can instrument all of these things. And you give it like data about like, oh, if they move their cursor 2 inches this way, all this stuff. And then you end up with all this information and you're like, whoa, like what do I actually pay attention to with all this data? And I think it's getting there with football too.
Yeah. Can I give you an example that like was incredibly helpful to me? So like in the Tony Dungy scheme of like defense, so that's like the Gus Bradleys, the Dan Quinns, the, you know, like some of those guys in that, like I would put them kind of in that Tampa family, not heavy blitz, like not heavy blitz. However, when you were at like the 29 to like maybe the 28 to like the 34, blitz tendencies went way up. Because that was what they deemed was the threshold back then for field goal versus punt. And, you know, like if you're just going around playing, like you might not even know. You might be like, oh, they're 28% blitz, like not a big blitz team. But if you like slice it and dice it and kind of find 2-point conversions is another one. They're bringing the house. Or they're not blitzing the whole game, then the game's on the line. You know, one play to win the game, they're bringing it. You know, like those kind of analytics, you know, stats or whatever, not necessarily like when to go for it and when not to go for it. But those things were incredibly helpful to me as a player.
Well, so I'm really interested. It sounds like you, and it's not just you, actually, I've heard this from other folks I've kind of listened to, did not walk away that impressed by the offense in this game for the Seahawks, right? Is that a fair statement?
I think my expectations are just really high. So like, mm-hmm. like I mentioned, like Sam had a really clean game, right? Like clean game, like no, you know, like good job. However, there are some things like in the quarterback room that you learn the hard way sometimes. First and goal from the one, we're going to call a throw. Like, do we know we could score a run in the ball? We know that. Like we're going to four try, like what's going to happen. But like we're doing this so that when we play somebody that we maybe have a hard time, like we're just keeping everybody honest and the execution, not just by the quarterback, by like everybody, like was just, you can't, that's not what great teams do. And like, I could break down that play and tell you like why it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, that's a spider right is usually what people call, you know, the whole offensive line is aggressive. Everybody blocks down to the left. And your fullbacks, you know, bluff blitzes and gets right out into the flat and catches the ball. Your tailback blocks the guy, like, you know, cuts him 2 inches above the patella is how they coach it. Okay. Get his hands down. Well, we got cute and we didn't run spider right. We ran widow right. So widow right is like a spider family. And instead of our tailback, Charbonnet in this case, doing the blocking and Robbie Utes catching the pass, or flipping responsibilities. Robbie Oud's going to stay in and block, and Charbonnet's going to run out there. Well, it just throws the timing off a little bit. And then Robbie Oud, one of the things he does better than anybody in the league is that he, on play action, this is why JSN gets so many balls on play action, you can't tell if it's a run or a pass. He comes down there, like to him, it's a run, even when it is a pass. It's called a bloody flat, that a bloody nose flat is what it's called, is what he does. He comes down, he like bloodies the nose of the guy covering him and then runs around. He does it so, so, so well. But in the goal line, it looked nothing like a run. He's running out there like, you know, he's got both arms out. Like he's, you know, I don't know what, like, you know, and it just, it felt like a pass. And so like everyone shares blame in it. And, but ultimately, like, it just gives you such a bad taste because, man, that was such a great start. Should have had a touchdown, at least a field goal. And, you know, it just, I don't know. It was a tough, and then we had another first and 10 sack later. So, I just like good is the enemy of great in the quarterback room. And so like, was it a good game? Yeah, it was a good game. You know, there were some great plays near the end, but like overall, like I think the expectation level for the room is higher. So yeah, that's maybe too much, but.
No, that was perfect. And I mean, I think everybody had that question about that play in particular. I asked Mike McDonald about it yesterday and I tried to be, you know, not assertive on it, but just like, hey, for people that don't really know all the ins and outs and play calling, you know, why isn't it just as simple as calling the barnyard there, you know, at the 1 yard line and just having AJ run in? And he's like, actually, you know, we probably should have done that. And I was like, oh, okay.
I have no problem. Like if we had called Spider right there, no issue. It probably scores. You know, Robbie just has to catch it. You know, he's a fullback. He can do that. If you go widow, right? Like you just got to do it better. Like everyone's got to do their job better. And then ultimately, like Mike Holmgren would say this a lot. Now he didn't call a lot of passes down inside the three because we had Sean Alexander and he's the best goal line back in the history of football, in my opinion. But, he would say, hey, and I would hear him say it to Brett Favre a lot because they did it a lot in Green Bay, you know, goal line passes to start it. He'd say, hey, listen, if I call a pass on first down, protect me. Like if it's there, if they're selling out for the run and doop, they want to give us a free one, cool. If they don't, protect me. First and 10, throw it away. Next. We got a great goal line. We got a great goal line package. Here we go. We're fine. Just protect the play caller. And I think that's what you say to a quarterback. First and goal from the one, call pass, protect the play caller. Let us call other plays if it wasn't
there. Yeah. If the only thing that was different in that game was that they scored a touchdown either on that play or another way, how different do you think people, maybe you, would feel about this game?
Well, yeah. Well, I also don't think it would have been 10-3 in the fourth quarter because now you would have made San Francisco a team that doesn't come. They're not like a come from behind team. They're not built for that. They're just not. So like if you would have gotten up earlier on them, now you get to like unleash your pass rush. They have no Trent Williams. They don't get to play the Christian McCaffrey inside the tackles game that they want to play. But even with that, the defense really dominated. I think that, you know, the punt team was pretty great and the defense was great. And again, I think like late in the game, especially fourth quarter, I think there was a third and two, a third and 10, Sam, Cooper Kupp, like those, that's why you make the big bucks, so to speak. Like that's what we brought you here for, to make plays like that when they need to be made. And that's what those guys did great. And that's why they should be proud of the effort and make no apologies for the loss. I'm just simply saying, like, I was nervous going into the game in the first three quarters, had me still nervous, didn't know how it was going to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, again, fan view, media view, not player coach view, but they've worked so hard to create this identity of like, tough, reliable, like they clearly want that. And they had on that first drive were absolutely mashing them on the ground. And it just felt like this chance to just hammer the nail. And for them to even call a pass there and put Sam, who honestly, like as great as he's been, has made some not always the best decisions, like putting him in that situation felt like a questionable decision.
I don't mind it though, because it's literally the same, like Spider Wright's the safest call. Like we run that play at Ensworth High School. Like, and we call it on the first and goal from the one. And because I'm setting it up for when we're playing a team that's more stout in the run, it's going to keep the backers back. It's going to keep the safeties back. It's going to help us in the long run. And it's free money, you know, like we got a free one. You know, like it's no biggie. I don't mind the play call. And I actually don't mind Sam learning from the mistake. Like every quarterback, you make mistakes. All good. Make mistakes. Just make new mistakes. That's it. Just don't be a mistake repeater. And I think so. It's great. You know, he's still a young quarterback. He played a lot of football. He's still a young quarterback. He's going to learn from that and be like, you know, that's as long as you learn from it. And like, hey, we're good, you know, from now on. Now, the other thing is all these defenses and everybody, they're like, oh, first and goal from the one, these guys like to throw it. Like, well, guess what? In the next four games, I doubt we do, but you never know, you know. But I thought we did a great job of coming out and having our offense look like what the 49ers offense usually looks like. Like we did it to them. And there's something really cool about doing it to the other team, you know, what they traditionally want to be. And that, I thought that's what we did. And I thought, you know, there's something really good to be proud of there.
Yeah, I was doing some looking around at teams that, you know, had at least 13 wins and had a negative turnover differential, like all this geeky stuff that I do. And in that, I came across the 2001 Rams team, which you have some familiarity with. And Kurt Warner had 10 fumbles like Sam Darnold's had this year. He had 22 interceptions that year. And like I had spaced on Kurt Warner being a guy that I looked through his career, threw a fair number of interceptions. And
obviously a lot of fumble, and a lot of fumbles too, if I recall, and not elusive. But that offense was like way ahead of the game.
Oh
and
yeah.
He came on the scene in like such a crazy way. I mean, in 01 quarterbacks, we're at the facility all day long watching film, whatever. Doug Peterson, Brett Favre, all those guys, we'd stay late and be like, hey, let's turn on the Rams. What's Kurt Warner's like destroying the NFL right now? Like, what are they doing? It was like, man, I've never seen that. Never seen that. I mean, they were killing people. So yeah, they were turning it over a little bit, but like they could not be stopped. That was impressive.
What are the situations that get your attention as a quarterback? Like maybe like Kurt Warner coming on from bagging groceries and putting, like at what point as a player, you're like, oh man, I got to watch like what's going on with this guy.
Well, if you remember that year, Trent Green was their guy. He was supposed to be their starter, paid him a ton of money. And then I think it was Rodney Harrison takes out his knee, you know, and on a play that would now be a penalty. It wasn't a penalty back then, I don't think. And, you know, Kurt Warner, like who, you know, in Green Bay, he had been there for a cup of coffee. If you saw the movie American Underdog, I recommend it. Good movie, actually. And you know, he didn't leave a lasting impression there, you know, like it wasn't. So for him to have that success in that building in Green Bay, they were like, whoa, hold up. Like, wait, that guy really? And so it compounded Dick Vermeil was a guy that was known too. Like there was a lot of stuff. And Mike Martz was just like the kind of the Mike Leach of the NFL a little bit. Like, yeah, well, try this, try that. Can't stop that, you know?
Yeah.
And we struggled for years and years and years defensively stopping the greatest show on turf. Like that was our kryptonite. I mean, Torrey Holt, Ricky Prohl, Isaac Bruce, I mean, Marshall Faulk, they had a team, but there's some things that people do and they're like ahead of the league schematically. And I just think that like, in that case they were, so that was good. It was really good.
We'll talk about schematic advantages in a little bit. Talking about Hasselbeck, Ring of Honor member for the Seahawks, top 50 player of all time. So you said something about protecting the play caller, and I know what you were meaning in that situation, but there's a little different question I want to ask you. So it did come out yesterday that Clint Kubiak is going to be interviewed by the Atlanta Falcons. At least he's been requested to be interviewed by the Atlanta Falcons for their head coaching job. What do you make of the job Clint Kubiak's done? And do you think that this is a guy that people are going to take really seriously as a head coaching candidate?
Yeah, well, it's all about like relationships and fit. You know, if Matt Ryan really is the, you know, director of our president of football operations, if like that's going to happen, then he's going to want somebody that is what, you know, very similar to what he knew and loved and trusted and respected. And like Kyle Shanahan would be that guy. So someone in that tree would make a ton of sense. Yeah, could I see it depending on the success of the Seahawks? Like possibly. Played against his dad quite a bit, you know, as a head coach, Gary Kubiak. I thought he was a really good coach. But there are some things schematically that like you just believe in and you respect. And I don't think that everyone notices them. I'll give you an example. On the 3rd and 17 play, the run that we had, it was an incredible play. But I give a lot of credit to Clint Kubiak. And I give a lot of, or to Sam Darnold, like to somebody, because there was something that they did on that play that, again, I don't think anybody notices. I don't even know if the defense notices. And yet, like, who, like, if Matt Ryan's doing the hiring, he notices. Like, I noticed, you know? And so, like, there's these little, like, nuanced things that people do. And then you're just like, you know, these guys are playing chess, other people are playing checkers. And like, that's the kind of person we need in the building. And sometimes it's X's and O's, and sometimes it's just a culture thing, and it's culture building and vision setting. And like, what's our plan for our program collectively? Like, how are we talking in the building? You know, that kind of stuff. So it really depends on what that decision maker is looking for. And that's why I think you're all over the board in terms of like what, who gets hired. You know, if you look at the thing, it's Giants need a head coach, Titans need a head coach, Falcons, Browns, Raiders, Cardinals, they're not all looking for the same thing. You know, some of those people are like, gosh, man, we need the opposite of a hot head coach. We need just the opposite of that. So they're going to look for someone who's more measured. Other people are like, hey, you know what? We did the young defensive guy thing. Not for us. We want a proven guy. It's been a head coach before. You know, so it all depends. And, you know, where would Clint fit in there? Like, I'm sure there's a few of those places that you know, hey, come work with our young quarterback. That'd be a cool thing.
Yeah. Speaking of chess versus checkers, Mike McDonald versus Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy. It's very rare for Kyle Shanahan to come out of a game looking like he didn't have any idea how to counter his opponent. And that's what it felt like in this game. What did you see from that side of the ball?
Well, when you don't have your left tackle, a lot changes. You know, that's why you pay that guy so much money. That's why they have a movie called The Blind Side. You know, a lot of your protection schemes, a lot of the stuff that you do is built off of that. But it wasn't just that. I think this was like a complete domination of like you beat the guy in front of you kind of a thing. And sometimes as a defense, you can feel when, you know, maybe your offense needs you to pick them up a little bit. You know, or maybe special teams needs to pick you up. Sometimes, like, I think one of my favorite things in practice, you go through practice, everything's kind of set up, the situation is set up. Very rarely do you practice, but sometimes you do what they call sudden change. So, like, basically what sudden change is, and you do it in training camp. I don't know if you really do it during the season. You know, your defense, you're on the bench, you're chilling, you're looking over pictures or whatever, you're getting water or whatever, and then out of nowhere, fire drill. You know, sudden change. You get up, find your helmet. You're sprinting out onto the field. Those big guys, they don't like to run, you know, that far. They run out there and you buckle your chin strap and it's like, boom, something bad just happened. And now it's our turn to step up, stop the bleeding, make a play. And I think the Seahawks have done an amazing job at that. And I don't know what it is about the brotherhood of like feeling like, hey, I got my brother's back. Or if it's just like, hey, it's our turn to like lead the team. You know, we're the engine, not the caboose. Like, whatever it is, I think they did a great job of that. And that, to me, is like above the X's and O's. That's not a Kyle Shanahan versus Mike McDonald thing that night. That's just a culture thing. That's how we talk to each other. That's how we think. That's how we, like, sudden change. This is our time. It's not sudden change like, oh, here we go again. There's a lot of teams that are that way. I feel like the Seahawks, for whatever reason, this defense, they hear sudden change. They think like, oh, my chance to be a star. And it's like almost contagious. It's pretty cool.
Well, I think it's interesting you brought up the sudden change thing, because I think one of my perspectives on this team, Matt, is when the defense doesn't have to you know, account for some turnover being put in some terrible situation, like in Carolina, where, you know, they had the turnover down near their own end zone. They're kind of unbeatable. And the fact of the matter is, in Mike McDonald's tenure, they've never lost a game where they don't turn the ball over. So it feels like the only chance that other teams really have to, you know, beat the Seahawks team is for the Seahawks team to contribute to beating themselves. So, like, talk for a second about, you said at the beginning how meaningful it is to be the number one seed, and people don't realize how big of a deal that is. How big of a deal is that?
Well, like, I was on the Colin Cowherd show yesterday, and he was like, you know, and probably a lot of people say this, he'd be like, you know, I like the Seahawks a lot. I just wish they didn't have a bye week. You know, they got all this momentum. They played great the other night. Like, sometimes funky things happen off of a bye week. And like, yeah, okay, maybe, you know, like, but I'll just tell you from a player's perspective, especially a big guy, like, no way, bro. Like, I said this to him yesterday, like, you have a high tolerance for my pain, you know, like, that's the, like, yeah, get out there and play another 60 minutes, like, it'd be in a dogfight. Like, no way, man. These players, you work so, so hard for that bye week. It's a guaranteed, not a loss on wild card weekend, and you get to heal up. Like, that is like a gift. Like, it is such a gift. You get to sit there on your couch and kind of like, we're going to be playing the Rams, Packers, Niners. Like, what do we got? You know, like, just casual is so nice. And as coaches, you kind of get a little bit of a game plan going. You do a little advanced scout here and there, a little self-scout. Like, it is incredible. So I get the whole momentum thing, but that's where I feel like it's up to the coaching staff during your bye week. Don't get stale. You need to create competitive environments where it's like ones versus ones, best versus best, whatever it is, in a controlled environment where our quarterback's never going to get hurt. JSN's never going to have someone tug on his jersey and like tweak a hand. Like, nothing's happening. No one's tackling our running backs to the ground. We're tagging off. Like, but we're doing it at such, like, that's the one thing that I think the best teams do. They know how to practice really fast, stay off the ground, and protect each other. No one's getting rolled up on. So this bye week to me is like worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, well, and for what it's worth, last year after the bye week, Mike McDonald's first year as coach, they went down to San Francisco, beat the 49ers for the first time in, you know, 5 years or whatever it had been. This year after the bye week, they went to Washington and Sam Darnold didn't have an incompletion for a half and they, you know, ran him out of their own building. So there's not a lot of evidence that bye weeks are somehow negative for this team. But
that's good. You know, that's good stuff to hear from you, because you always hear like, oh, Andy Reid off the bye. And then there's other people who are like, oh man, I don't know what these guys did after the bye. It was no good. So like that's encouraging to me. You know, like, I didn't have that off the top of my head. I like that. I like to hear that.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, part of it is, I think having Mike McDonald and that staff have extra time to self scout and get ready for you know, there's this idea that, you know, everybody benefits from the same things. It's just not true. Like, certain people take information and time and they use it differently than other people. And, yeah. And Mike McDonald happens to be a guy that I trust with that time to use it really, really wisely.
The danger on offense, and Sean McVay talked about this when he lost his Super Bowl to the Patriots. You have 2 weeks to prepare for the Super Bowl. And I think this was a danger that we would have fallen into had Mike Holmgren not had so much Super Bowl experience. You do too much. You've got like an extra week to prepare. You got an extra week of plays to put in. And so like, he was really good at, if one play went in, another play had to come out, you know. And I do get the sense that Mike McDonald isn't like, hey, let me prove how smart I am. Look at me, prove how exotic I can get with this extra time. He's got kind of this mindset of like, no, we are who we are. We do what we do. We're going to get creative. We're going to make some stuff up as we go. We're going to do a good job with it. But like, other than that, like, I don't care. Anywhere, anytime, any place, anybody, here we go. We don't need to try to get cute. And I think there's like a steadiness that he brings that way that is really cool.
Can I sneak in two more questions for you, Matt, as we're pushing up on the half hour here? First, the running game. Obviously, like, the last 3 weeks, they've gone off, over 160 yards rushing each game. Are you noticing anything that's standing out to you about why they're getting successful all of a sudden?
A lot of reasons, little things, right? You know, wide receivers blocking has been awesome. Like I kind of called him out a little bit to you.
You did. It's
just been so much better. So I think they're just seeing what I'm seeing. I kind of hinted a little bit on the 3rd and 17 play, like using your cadence as a weapon is such a thing as a quarterback. And when you're on the road, they say that, oh, you don't have that as a weapon. BS. Okay. They did this thing. I call it a secret snap. And I don't even want to give it away, but I feel like this is all Seahawks people watching, so like it's all good. They do this thing where everybody goes up to the line and gets set. And you do it on third down because you're trying to keep them from like disguising coverage or whatever. You want to get an advantage. And the center, he's the last one to the ball. He acts like he's tying his shoe or he acts like he's talking to the quarterback. He's the last one to the ball. Everyone is set. The defense is like, we don't have to get set. Center's not even over the ball yet. He gets down there, he touches the ball, and he does his little silent thing, look left, look right, whoop, snap the ball, and we're off. Now, the defense, they don't even have knee bend. Some of their guys don't even have the hand in the dirt. And, like, here we go. And, like, that was an example of using your cadence as a weapon in the run game that Sam Darnold's never going to get credit for, but he should, like, in the building. Like I mentioned earlier, to guys like Matt Ryan or, like, me or, like, centers. Like, it is so great to the team. And everyone's just like, oh, it was just, like, a good 3rd and 17 run. Like, no, it was, like, this was coached. And this was like, an experienced quarterback or center or – it was great. So, like, there's little nuggets where this team is doing stuff that is putting their – other players, running backs in this case, in position. But like, sure, there's the center had a great block. Bobo had a great block. There's a lot of credit to go around, but it's just exciting that, you know, one of the reasons that this team is such a good road team is that they've kept the ability to use the cadence as a weapon, whether it's quarterback, barnyard, whatever. Love it.
All right. Last thing for you, Matt, possible opponents for the Seahawks in the divisional round, Carolina, the Rams, the 49ers, the Packers. Those are your four possibilities. Obviously, you'd love to see Carolina again, but talk to us about maybe what most people consider maybe the worst case scenario, that you play the Rams in your first game. Is that the worst case scenario to get that game first and potentially have, if you get by that, your NFC Championship game might feel like a step down?
I mean, I mentioned it to you, like, you know, in theory, the Super Bowl is the two best teams. Like, I don't know. Like the two best teams in the league this year might be the Rams and the Seahawks. Like it's just the facts. And so, yeah, like if you know you have to play them at some point, maybe you want them when you're coming off of a bye mm-hmm. and they're coming off of a dogfight, you know, like maybe that's the case on the road, cross country. Like maybe that's the time that you would want them, you know? So I don't know. Like it's that is a thing. Like, you know, no one's saying that in the locker room. Like, literally, I can promise you in the locker room, they're like 0-0. We're hosting a playoff game in the divisional round. I don't care who it is. Bring it. Like, anybody. Ram, fine. Whatever. Anybody. But as I'm sitting here, like, in my house, like, you know, with a hat on, just chilling, I'm saying to myself, hey, if you do have to play them, let's make the playing field not as even. And how could we do that? Well, we could do that if what I just mentioned were to happen. Now, I know it's unlikely, but it's possible. So, yeah, so we'll see.
Great stuff as always, Matt. And as we've said before, all this is benefiting Team Impact and appreciate you and all that you're doing. So we will see you next week.
Awesome. And Team Impact, thanks you as well, Brian. I talked to them recently, so they told me to pass that along to you and to your listeners. And so to everybody, it's a really cool partnership. So I appreciate it as well.
Awesome. Matt Hasselbeck, Ring of Honor member, one of the best 50 players in Seahawks history and a friend of the show. Have a great rest of your week, Matt.
You too. See you.
All right. That is Matt Hasselbeck with us every Tuesday during the season and the postseason, as the case may be. And just great stuff from Matt as usual. And it was fun last week. I could hear, like, the fun part to me was when he was a little nervous about this game. And I loved it because, one, he's a fan, you know, like he's a player. So it is different. It's not the same as being like a fan that's not played or doesn't know all the people involved, but he's invested. It's genuine. Like everything about Matt is genuine and authentic. That's one of the things I've always respected and liked about him. And so he's into this Seahawks run, and he saw kind of what, I mean, I'd seen, and I think the Seahawks saw, which was, Brock Purdy's elusiveness and resourcefulness being a real weapon, and that's been something that Seahawks at times have struggled with on defense. I mean, there's been so many things they've done really, really well, but they've struggled at times with quarterbacks that kind of can, you know, break the pocket and, you know, evade their rush. And that was on Matt's mind last week. And sure enough, the Seahawks defense just crushed the pocket and didn't give Brock Purdy any real chance to create. And there was a few small moments of that, but for the most part, it was no go. And so, you know, then the image of Matt in his house with AB and like his brother doing a show, like, I mean, I think those are our family goals, right? To have a crew like that, that's just all enjoying time together, hanging out, watching football, like laptops out, geeking out, or just, you know, freaking out, whatever it might be. I mean, it's a special crew that they've got. And I think anyone that's got a family, which we all do in some way, you know, can appreciate how special something like that can be. All right, folks, if you haven't given the show a like and click subscribe, great time to do it. I don't feel like I even have to remind you guys anymore. The show's just growing like crazy. It's been unreal. I think I'll tell you guys this. I was going to post it just to be an asshole, but I chose not to. If you remember the whole David Lombardi thing when he posted his stats and he had had, after I think Christmas, had like over 500,000 views in 48 hours. And then Grant Cohn posted his was like 30,000 views more than Lombardi. And then I posted that I had more than either of them for that period. And, you know, we went back and forth, but it was good fun. And we had over 1 million views in the last 48 hours. So it's been absolutely bonkers. That's just on YouTube. And there's a really important Apple podcast review. I told you guys, I'm so grateful when you leave 5-star reviews. Listen to this one. All right. Casuals are just now finding out what I already know. As someone who has spent years dissecting the 49ers and NFC West football at the highest levels of journalism, I queued up the Hawk Blogger podcast for some in-depth divisional reconnaissance. And shockingly, Brian Nemhauser and his little operation actually deliver the most informed and in-depth Seahawks coverage out there. HB Mornings slice through the nonsense with daily precision that embarrasses the amateurs. Real Hawk Talk delivers guests and breakdowns that hold up under scrutiny and move the needle. Jeff Simmons' Canadian insights, elite level. Evan Hill's rants, chef's kiss. If you're pretending to understand the Hawks team without this podcast, you're just embarrassing yourself. This is the benchmark. Everyone else is just noise. 5 stars, obviously. No apologies necessary. Sincerely, David Lombardi, ball knower. Whoever did that, love you. That was really funny. That made myself and the crew laugh out loud when we saw that podcast review come in. So thank you for that. All right. So a couple things. First of all, you might not have noticed because you couldn't have seen it, but I got a little gift from Simply Seattle, 12 greater than 49. It is an awesome shirt. Highly recommend you go get yours, one of your own. All you got to do in order to do that, head over to simplyseattle.com, use promo code HawkBlogger15, gets you 15% off all your favorite Seahawks gear, Mariners gear, Huskies gear, Kraken gear, whatever it is that you want to get. And I don't even know if they have Torrent gear. Like, maybe they do, but if anyone's going to have it, it's going to be simplyseattle.com, code HawkBlogger15. I've been working with them on some designs. Like, I think we got to get some dark side material out there. We got some ideas percolating. We'll see what we can come up with. But make sure you head over to simplyseattle.com. I think they get in their like licensed gear for like the division title on Thursday. So put in your orders now. Start getting that stuff before we get to the playoff game next week. Then go to Sleeper, download the Sleeper app if you haven't already. Follow along with favorite stats on your favorite sports, NHL, NBA, whatever it might be. And if you use promo code Hawks, you will get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions do apply, so see Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. All right. So got a few other super chats here. And I think there might be, I'll pull up the old Venmo super chats as well. Venmo.com/Brian-Nemhauser. So let me pull these up while I'm getting the others ready. Okay. So first super chat is, oh, we've got a couple people that have joined as members over here on YouTube. Wally World, Steve O, welcome to the crew. Good old Abe, welcome to the crew. Both of you, hopefully you are club level or higher YouTube members. That gets you access to the Discord server. Discord server is popping, and the rules are very simple over there. They're the same as the chat. Be kind to each other, talk football, keep it to sports, and it's a good crew. It's a really good crew. So got a really good growing community there, and thanks to the mods who help keep it that way. Smokehawk says, Brian, what did you think of Mike McDonald's answer about fourth downs, the analytics in that situation and feel of the game? I might have missed his answer yesterday on fourth downs. I asked him about this a while ago, and I do plan on asking it again because let's check the latest numbers. At last check I had, the Seahawks had attempted the fewest fourth downs in the NFL, but it converted fourth downs at one of the highest rates. And so for me, I'm like, you guys should be going for it more often. And so let's take a look at the latest. The Seahawks end up with 12 fourth down attempts on the year. That's 7 fewer than the nearest team. The most fourth down attempts is 41. You're talking about 12 for the Seahawks. 41 is the most. To give you some comparisons of like healthy offenses, let's look. The Bills have gone for it 32 times. The Rams have gone for it 30 times. The Bears, 29 times. The Jaguars, 29 times. Those are three times as many. Well, like not three times, but close to three times as many as the Seahawks have attempted it. Now, as far as conversion rate, the Seahawks, well, they've dropped down a little bit. They are 58.3%. They had been up over 70%. So they're middle of the pack. But man, I wish they would do it more often. So I do think that's an area that there's still growth. I still don't it was helpful to hear Matt talk about the reasons why you might run a pass play from the 1 yard line for future occurrences. But honestly, I just feel like, come on, like don't be cute. Like you don't need, like if you want other teams to have to think about that, I'd rather you just be a team that you have enough confidence in your run game that you don't care if they know that a run's coming. Like you're just going to do it. And if they're going to gear up against the run, then that's when you call the pass. But anyway, I think all of these things to me add up to, you guys are smart. Stop out thinking yourselves. Just go for it on fourth when you should. Use the barnyard more often. Heck, I think they should be considering using it on third and three to gain 2 yards and then do it again on fourth and one. I mean, the Eagles do stuff like that. And the Seahawks have been as successful, if not more successful, in those situations this year. So, yeah. Skiff Feldspar says, bagging groceries, married to Webs. I don't know what that means. Sorry. Go Hawks and M's. Why don't the NFL networks and local newspapers reference advanced metrics like DVOA or PFF? And is DVOA why you stopped your power ratings? This is a good question. So first things first, I do not consider PFF to be an advanced metric. I consider PFF to be, you know, an arbitrary grading system that, you know, some crews come up with, and it's independent of pretty critical information about what the team and has for the actual assignments for players. So I don't consider it an advanced metric for what it's worth. I just consider it a useful signal to pay attention to. And sometimes it'll show me like, oh, there's this player that is popping that I might not have known to even pay attention to. But anyway, I do think PFF gets referenced quite a bit. It gets referenced in the Seattle Times. Bob Condotta does it quite a bit. I've seen, obviously on the Chris Collingsworth pod, broadcast, they're always showing the ranks of players. So I think PFF does get referenced. DVOA is an old, like old soul. And I think it's for the true geeks that have been around for a while paying attention to it. Football Outsiders used to be exactly that. Football Outsiders was this place for the true like geeky, you know, writers and number crunchers to analyze football. And Aaron Schatz was, you know, at the core of that with DVOA. I think a lot of people just don't know about it, don't understand it. It is, I think, getting further into the forefront. I will say that when I put out the updates on DVOA rankings this year, those posts have gone like pretty widespread every single week I've done that. So people are interested in it. I don't know why this year they're more interested in it than they were in the past. Is DVOA why I stopped my power rankings? No, actually, it's part of the reason I started my power rankings, because I was getting so annoyed having to wait till it used to be like Tuesday until you could get updated DVOA rankings. And so I wanted to do my own power ratings. And I had, you know, my own formula, which those who read the blog, I always publish the formula. I don't keep it secret. And it was always pretty, it was a pretty good indicator. I thought it tracked pretty well with DVOA. I stopped doing it because I do this show every day. I pick the areas where I think my writing and my work there is most valuable. And to be totally honest, like I don't make any money on the blog. It's free. For the time being, I intend to keep it free. And so like my attention goes to places that's going to put, you know, food on the table, so to speak, for the household. So, that's part of why that changed, but I appreciate the question. All right. Next question from Smokehawk. When you get intense after a game, there is no equal, Brian. Go Hawks. Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. I have a very dark side myself, no pun intended with the dark side defense. When it comes to Seahawks football, when it comes to football in general, but definitely Seahawks specifically, I've done and said things I'm not super proud of. Like it's not my best self, but it is a true part of me. And I don't know how best to describe it, but it's something that I enjoy letting out of the cage now and then. And football's a place where I can kind of safely do that. It used to be when I played sports, you know, I'm just a competitor. And so I get really intense about a lot of things, but especially about competition and sports. And so, you know, I try my best to rise above all that. I really do. And that's part of where the numbers help me as well, is it kind of takes the emotion out of it. But I hate the 49ers. I hate the team. I hate the fans. I really do. And most of it's sports hate. Some of it's not. I'll admit to that. I will say that the organization is first class. They're great hosts down there. There's great food. It's like the whole facility, everything about the way they do things down there is first class. So, you know, kudos to them for that. But, you know, sometimes I want to give it back. And I'll tell you, when I last year would post just honest analysis about the Seahawks, about Seahawks versus the Packers, for example, and then that game turned out so bad, I got just buried in Packers comments, and then, you know, buried in 49ers. And like most of the time I can just ignore that stuff. But the 49ers, man, like so many of their fans have the stupidest arguments and are so confident in their stupid arguments. It feels really good just to shove it back. It just did. And so, yeah, kind of let it go. And Evan's a bad influence. He eggs me on. Jeff Jennings, very, very proud of the offensive line development, exactly where they should be. That's a good opportunity to share something I put out this morning. Let me put this up on screen for you guys. So this, this was a look that I did at the teams with the most rushing yards since week 16. So the last 3 weeks of the season. And these are all the playoff teams in descending order. Your Seattle Seahawks, 514 yards rushing is the most of any of the playoff teams over the last 3 weeks, over 5 yards a carry. Over a 42% success rate. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. You know, considering how good of a rushing team the Rams are, for example, they've rushed for 398 yards over that time and also a 5.1 yard per carry. 4.2 yard per carry for the 49er, for the Rams. The 49ers had been averaging more than that. And actually over the course of the 3 weeks, even including the Seahawks games, are averaging 5.1 yards per carry. So you've got the Seahawks, I think, heading into the playoffs with a weapon on offense that they honestly didn't really have earlier in the year, only even a few weeks ago, didn't really have. And so I think this matters. I think it's going to bear fruit in the playoffs. And it's only good news for sure. I also looked up, I don't think I published this, any graphics on it or anything, but the Seahawks rushing defense since week 10 has been extraordinary. It's been exceptionally good. Over the course of the season, it's already been the number one run defense in the NFL. It's been even better since week 10. And it's up there, like their week 10 on performance is up there with among the best DVOA run defenses in history. So they are really kind of at another level right now than they've been. All right. Skiff Feldspar says, I'd love to sit with you for a Hawks game, but I don't think we would balance each other out. I mean, you say you love to sit next to me. I basically spend the whole time just screaming. I mean, I take my job as a fan seriously. I am in there. I'm trying to affect the game as best I can. I start screaming before the team, the opponent gets in the huddle, even though there's no one else around me doing it. And I get some weird looks and I don't care. Like I've been at this for a very long time. And I take the job of helping the team out seriously. It's part of why I sit in the stands instead of the press box, you know, like mostly I do it because I've got friends and I enjoy spending time with my friends and it's an experience I don't want to miss, but also because I volunteer as tribute. Like I'm there to help. And so, by the way, you can be there to help too. HBTix.com. I fixed a bug that I unfortunately introduced that was hiding all the playoff tickets. It's hard to get tickets if they're hidden. They're now all up there. HBTix.com. So people can list their playoff tickets. You can buy your playoff tickets. I just got my playoff tickets from the team yesterday. Exciting, man. It's exciting. And we got to make sure that every single crazy Seahawks fan we can put in the stadium ends up there. And let's get those tickets into Seahawks fans' hands now before opposing teams even have a chance, because no opposing team knows who that they're going to play the Seahawks at this point. Seahawks fans know that they're going to have a game next week. So let's get Seahawks fans buying up those tickets now. HBTix.com. All right, here's a super chat over on Venmo.com/Brian-Nemhauser. By the way, if you ever don't know that, my link tree is in all my social profiles. You can click on that. The Venmo link is in there, among a bunch of other links. All right. This comes from Mikey Kansa. I don't know how to pronounce your last name, Mikey. I'm sorry. So says, I love and believe in this team so much that I've chosen to look forward to the Super Bowl with this. What song do you think this team will choose or fits this team best for our walkout? Would it be a throwback to the Bittersweet Symphony? Thank you, HB crew. I will say I know it was one of Paul Allen's favorite songs and his choice. I hated that Bittersweet Symphony was the song for the team because it felt too on the nose about being a Seahawks fan. Remember, up until 2005, the team had never been to a Super Bowl. So Bittersweet is not what I wanted to be the anthem. That felt too much like it had been the anthem for the franchise for all those other years. So I don't know. Like, I remember these haters can't hold them back to me being more the true anthem of that LOB team, because they reveled in being the team that nobody picked, that nobody understood, being full of players that were passed over and fifth round picks and undrafted free agents. Like, that's what that team was. I don't know what this team's anthem would be. Like, it is such an eclectic mix of people. Mike McDonald yesterday talked about that his playlist is like worship gospel music mostly, and then some country. You know, I'm sure Brady Russell would probably be in that category as well. AJ Barner is all over the place. You got Abe Lucas with hard rock, metal music. Obviously you've got rap and R&B and all, like it's a mix. So I do not think 50-year-old me is a good person to assess what what the anthem for this Seahawks team, this very young Seahawks team and coaching staff, what it should be. But maybe we'll find out. I hope we get to find out over the course of this this time with the team. So let's talk about a couple other things, news and notes. Let's see if there's anything else that I did not bring up. I can't remember if I shared. I don't think I shared this yesterday. So let me share a couple other bits of research that I was doing yesterday that may or may not be of interest to you guys, but I'll share it so you can see it. So interesting to me, I did not know this till I was doing the research. Both number one seeds in the playoffs this year, the Seahawks and Denver, the Broncos, have 14 wins. They also have a negative turnover differential. Both of them have a negative 3 turnover margin on the season. That's crazy. That is crazy that both teams have negative turnover margins and were the number one seeds. In fact, I went back and looked at every team since 1999, which is as far back as my data easily goes to that I can write my queries for, that had at least 13 wins and a negative turnover differential. And so these aren't all number one seeds necessarily. But of the teams that had that experience before this year, there's been six since 1999. The last one, the most recent, was the 2022 Chiefs. They won the Super Bowl. And they also had a negative 3 turnover margin. The 2012 Broncos had a negative 1 turnover differential. They lost in the divisional round. The 2011 Saints with Drew Brees, they won 13 games, negative 3 turnover margin, lost in the divisional round. The 2001 Rams with the Kurt Warner-led team had a negative 9 turnover differential. They gave the ball away 44 times. They lost in the Super Bowl to the Patriots. And then the 2000 Titans and the 1999 Colts also were negative. They both lost in the divisional round. Now, I'm not saying that this, like, people are like, oh, this just means the Seahawks are probably going to lose in the divisional round. Maybe that's what it means. It also could just mean that the playoffs are a bit of a crapshoot anyway. You're playing against very good teams. Anything can happen. In some of the cases of these teams, turnovers did bite them in the playoffs. For example, the Saints team in 2011, they won, I think, their first playoff game, if I remember right. They lost to the 49ers when they turned the ball over five times. So, yeah, like, you turn the ball over five times, you're probably going to lose any game, let alone a game to a playoff team. In other cases, it wasn't turnovers that hurt these teams in the playoffs. And if I look at the Seahawks over the last, let's look over the last few games. Seahawks turnovers. So the most encouraging thing I would say is since that Rams game where they turned the ball over four times in week 11, the Seahawks have had three of their seven games where they didn't turn the ball over at all. That only happened once in their first 10 games. So that's improvement. Three out of seven is good. There was one game where they had one turnover. So call it four out of seven where they've had one turnover or less. Now, they had two against the Vikings. They had three against the Rams. And they had two against the Panthers. And Sam Darnold has pretty much been the guy that's been the source of a lot of these turnovers, right? But if we look at Sam's situation, since really that week 11 game against the Rams, he has not had more than one interception in any game other than, he's not had more than one interception in any game other than the Rams. And in fact, the second game against the Rams. And he's had zero interceptions in four of the seven games. So that might seem like a low bar, but it's an important one. Now, yes, he does have fumbles as well over that span. But if we just look at, let's look at since week 12. All right. I'm going to look this up. I haven't done this yet. We're going to go by, passing numbers. And we're going to look at the 2025 season. And we're going to look from week 12 on. Let's go week 12 on. And we're going to say, got to have at least 40 pass attempts. Maybe it should be more like 50. And we're going to see, let's see how they do in terms of interceptions. Wrong setting. Let's try that again. All right. So interception rates. Let's make this a higher threshold for attempts. Let's go up to 140 attempts. I think that seems like a good cutoff here, roughly. Let's see if this comes back with a better list of players. Yeah. So there's 23 players, quarterbacks that have had at least 140 attempts. Interception rate over that time. Sam Darnold has a 2% interception rate, which is middle of the pack. It's better than Joe Burrow. It's better than Matt Stafford's, by the way, over that time. Matt Stafford's at 2.3%. Better than Jalen Hurts, 2.7%. Better than Brock Purdy, 3.2%. It's not bad. Now, guys that are ahead of him that are in the playoffs, Trevor Lawrence is at 1.8%. Josh Allen, 1.8%. Drake May, 1.7%. C.J. Stroud, 1.7%. Bo Nix, 1.3%. Caleb Williams, 1.2%. So there are some guys that have been better over that time, but generally, like, Darnold's done all right since week 12 in terms of turning the ball over via the pass. So anyway, I just found this to be kind of interesting. Not sure where you guys are on it. I think I shared this, but I can't remember for sure if I did. So let me scroll down to this. So interestingly, the Seahawks 2025 defense actually ranks higher all time in DVOA than the Legion of Boom in 2013. So from a DVOA perspective, this is the best defense in Seahawks history. You may not agree. I'm not saying I agree. Obviously, part of how you stamp your legacy is to what you do in the playoffs against the best. And that Legion of Boom team absolutely cemented itself as one of the best defenses in the history of the sport with how they demolished Peyton Manning and that record-setting Broncos offense in the playoffs. But in this case, you know, DVOA has the Seahawks 2025 defense as the 11th best all time. The LOB in 2013 was the 14th best. Now, one of the differences there is the LOB was a much better pass defense. They had a negative 27.6% DVOA, with negative is good. It means you're negatively affecting the offense. And the 2025 defense is negative 20. That's a pretty significant gap. But on the other side, this rush defense for the Seahawks, negative 30.1, is massively better than the 2013 squad, which was negative 18.5. We're going to find out how much it matters that the Seahawks have a pretty historically good run defense. We'll see how much that is a determining factor. I think against a team like the Rams, I think that's a really big deal. If you can stop the Rams' run game, I think that offense looks very, very different. That's not an easy task. They're a great offensive line. I think that's really well coached. I think that might be what it comes down to, is how well you stop the run. General like logic is that it's more about stopping the pass, but we'll find out. We will find out together. All right. So folks, tomorrow, don't exactly have it on lock yet, but I'm working on getting a former guest back for a return visit for the first time this year. And we'll see what time that ends up happening. We're not going to do a first look tomorrow because the Seahawks aren't playing on Sunday. I may choose to do like a bit of a deep dive on the playoff teams, the potential playoff opponents. And maybe we'll get a little bit into the Packers, since that's a team that we haven't had a chance to really dig in on. I might do, if you guys are up for it, I might do a, you know, sit and explore episode where I do some of the research in real time. We talk through it together. Some people hate those episodes. Some people love those episodes. I, you know, to me, it's just a matter of like what we want to spend our time with together. But yeah, I think getting a little bit more familiar with the potential playoff opponents might be on the menu. Someone said mock draft. Nope. Nope. Although myself and the crew are making our combine arrangements, because we're going to bring, the plan is Nathan's going to be back. We're going to bring Jeff Simmons this year, Evan Hill, Josh Cashman. Dana's going to be there. We're going to have a lot of Real Hawk Talk folks at the combine. So it's going to be a little bit crazy in Indianapolis in, what is it, February. So I'm looking forward to that. But no draft stuff right now. I have no appetite for it at all. And I'm happy that we don't have to be thinking about that. And Rob Staton, for what it's worth, I mean, he's confirmed a lot of what I have already suspected, which is this is just not a great draft. Doesn't mean there's not great players, but there's not a lot there. So we'll people get so sick of the mock drafts. We do them so often. This is a good chance to just keep focusing on football. I see someone asking, do we want the Packers to win? Well, maybe that's a question we'll kind of talk about in a show tomorrow. We'll figure out how it plays out. But I think we'll that's my most likely outcome for the morning. We'll see when I can get my guest on, and I'll let you guys all know about that. All right, folks, appreciate all of you. If you haven't left us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please take the chance to do that. It really, really helps and makes my day. I really do appreciate it. Some of them are very funny. Some of them are just very kind, but they're all read and very much appreciated. Okay, that will do it. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. The Seahawks are off today, so I will be back with you tonight for the Seahawks Collective at 5 p.m. Annabelle Hasbeck, Rob Staten, Michael Sean Dugar, and myself. So see you at 5 o'clock. Until then, have a great day.